Radio Prague News.
EU interior ministers say 9 new countries are ready to enter the Schengen zone of free travel. President Václav Klaus will award distinguished Czech personalities on the anniversary of the foundation of Czechoslovakia. And an experts team that will decide on the construction of a planned new National Library building has had its first session. Nine new EU countries are ready to join the Schengen zone of free travel on the 21st of December, according to the Prague Declaration, a document adopted by interior ministers and other representatives of EU countries who met in Prague on Friday. The declaration says that the Czech Republic, Estonia, Hungary, Lithuania, Latvia, Malta, Poland, Slovakia and Slovenia are well prepared for abolishing border checks on their frontiers with other Schengen zone members and enter the free travel area on 21st of December this year. This conclusion was also confirmed by a report by an evaluation committee overseeing the introduction of an information system that was published in Brussels on Friday. Some old Schengen zone members, such as Austria, are however considering policing their borders with the extending countries even after this date. President Václav Klaus will award distinguished Czech personalities on the 89th anniversary of the foundation of Czechoslovakia. The ceremony will take place at the Prague Castle on Sunday. According to the daily Lidové noviny, the distinguished figures to receive the Order of Tomáš Garrigue Masaryk, the Distinguished Service Medal and other decorations include Anna Honová, an anti-communist resistance fighter, Marie Goretti Boltnárová, a member of the Catholic Order of Sisters of Mercy, Second World War veteran Stanislav Hnilička, who fought the Axis armies at Tobruk, and visual artist Oldřich Kulhánek, who designed the currently used Czech banknotes. A team of experts that will decide on the construction of a planned new National Library building had its first session in Prague on Saturday. The team had been set up to overcome the controversy over the new building that is to be constructed on Prague's Letná Plain. The team includes Prague Mayor Pavel Bem, National Library Director Vlastimil Ježek and architect Jan Kaplický, who designed the new building popularly known as the Blob. Its critics claim that the design will disturb the city's skyline and does not fit the historic environment of Prague. 4 members of the Czech Army's general staff have been accused of fraud, the daily Mladá Fronta Dnes reported. They are suspected of paying unauthorized bonuses to themselves. The fraud was discovered during a regular inspection and one of the accused officers has been arrested. Among the officers facing the accusations is also Major General Ivos Boril, the former chief of the military office of Czech President Václav Klaus. And now look at the weather. It is expected to be overcast and foggy over the weekend with drizzle and rain. Temperatures should range between 8 and 10 degrees centigrade. My name is Jan Richter and that was the news.
Thanks for tuning in to Radio Prague. Coming up next, our weekly magazine Inside Central Europe. Don't forget that on some of our times and frequencies over the weekend, you can also hear our regular Saturday program. For details of precise times and frequencies, send for a brochure at Radio Prague, English section 10099 Prague 2, the Czech Republic, or visit our website at www.radio.cz/English.
Hello, this is Insight Central Europe. I'm Kerry Skyring with stories from Poland, Hungary, Slovakia, Slovenia, the Czech Republic and Austria. And this week, a small tremor shakes Poland's political landscape. We're asking, is this the end of the Kaczynski era? We're also following Slovene voters as they choose a new president. And we'll hear how Czech innovation is making beer more dispensable. These stories and more in this Insight Central Europe. Last weekend's snap parliamentary election in Poland has brought about far-reaching changes in the country's political scene. Out is the conservative government of Jarosław Kaczyński, whose Law and Justice Party suffered a crushing defeat. In is the liberal Civic Platform. But as you'll hear in this report from Polish Radio's Michał Kubicki, this does not mark the end of the Kaczyński era in Polish politics.
2 years ago, Civic Platform leader Donald Tusk lost both the parliamentary and presidential elections. Until the final stage of this election campaign, many people predicted a speedy end to his political career. Now, 50 years old, Tusk will most probably be Poland's next prime minister. He described election day last Sunday as the happiest day of his life and thanked all those who cast their votes.
We know full well that you imposed a great duty on us. First of all, a duty to bring about a reconciliation among Poles. I'd like to thank also those who voted for our opponents. We'll do our best to make Poland a good place to live for you too.
During the election campaign, Tusk spoke of cutting red tape and lowering taxes, promising an economic miracle modeled on Ireland. Outgoing Prime Minister Jarosław Kaczyński referred to this in his address after the announcement of the election results.
I wish Donald Tusk success and I congratulate him on his victory, but we shall be looking very closely whether his election promises are being fulfilled.
Voter turnout of over 54% was the highest since the collapse of communism in 1989. The higher turnout was particularly evident among young voters, a fact which, according to political analyst Robert Strybel, contributed tangibly to the success of the Civic Platform.
For the first time, so many young people voted. It's unknown why. I guess the sociologists will try to figure out. Last time, in 2005, said that they're not interested in politics or they don't vote or whatever. This time they did, and of course, since Mr. Tusk's party has been touting a kind of a pro-youth position, this is what happened.
In Warsaw, thanks to these young voters, the Civic Platform scored a landslide victory.
I'm happy. I'm really happy. I hope something will change in our country. I think the economy will be better.
We are expecting that they will be focused on real changes and doing things.
The advantage of the liberals in the parliament is such big that in the next years it's possible to make crucial changes in the economics, infrastructure. It's the most important thing as for now.
What sort of government can we expect from the Civic Platform? According to Marek Magierowski of the Rzeczpospolita Daily, changes will be particularly evident in the domestic policies.
I believe they would be more focused on free market, on fighting against bureaucracy, on financial reforms of the Polish budget. And they would certainly be more focused on our road to the euro.
Most foreign analysts note that Europe gasped with relief after the defeat of the Kaczyński government. The victorious Civic Platform says that it will patch up Poland's relations with Europe, but many analysts here do not anticipate much change on the foreign policy front. Marek Magierowski again.
I think that the Civic Platform realizes that it's very hard to return from the road the law and justice had chosen 2 years ago. The Civic Platform would be defending our interests in the European Union. Maybe it's not as nationalistic a party as Law and Justice, but I think the German government, should not be expecting any dramatic changes in the foreign policy.
Despite its victory, the Civic Platform is 22 parliamentary seats short of being able to form a majority government. A coalition with the Polish Peasant Party, the smallest of the four parties in the parliament, is the most probable scenario. President Lech Kaczyński, the brother of the outgoing prime minister, will be a key element in the parliamentary puzzle, and the shape of his cohabitation with a future coalition will be crucial for Poland's political stability. With Jarosław Kaczyński heading the biggest opposition party and his brother in the presidential palace for another 3 years, this is not the end of the Kaczyński era. I'm Michał Kubicki for Insight Central Europe.
Thanks, Michal. And now to more changes in the political landscape of Central Europe. Last Sunday, Slovenes went to the polls to elect their third president since independence. Voters could choose from seven candidates seeking to succeed the incumbent, Janez Janosik. The first round of the presidential polls brought some surprises. Lojze Petele, a former Slovenian prime minister and a member of the European Parliament, was the winner with 27.5% of the vote, well short of the 50% needed for an outright win. The two left-leaning candidates, Danilo Turk and Mitja Gaspari, fought it out for second place. While Petele is a sure contender for the second-round runoff, it's still unclear who his rival will be. So close is the vote count between Turk and Gaspari. Ksenija Samardzija-Matul reports from Radio Slovenia International.
A major surprise was the rise in the popularity of nationalist leader Zmago Jelinčić. Jelinčić of the National Party took nearly 20% of the vote, more than double his showing in 2002. He was the only candidate who stood for the presidential office before and was extremely pleased with the result.
If the Slovenian media wouldn't make a cut out of me in the first 15 days of the election campaign, I'm sure that I would be in the second round, but it doesn't matter. I really got an excellent number of votes.
Analysts attribute Jelinčić's success to the fact that in a dull campaign, he was the only one who stood out with his clear positions on many complex issues at home and abroad. But not just Jelinčić's success is the topic of discussions after the first round of the elections. Also heavily discussed was the organizing of voting abroad, which was changed while election procedures were already underway. The controversy about these votes was raised after the National Electoral Commission decided to send the diaspora some 39,000 ballots, while so far ballots had been sent only by request. The tight outcome after the first round is likely to be further complicated by votes from abroad, as the new system of distributing ballots among the Slovenian diaspora has been called into question by some candidates and could be the source of bitter disputes in case it alters the outcome for second place. Mitja Gaspari believes that the part of the election regarding the diaspora voting is problematic and indecent for the state because some rules were changed while election procedures were already underway.
I'm happy with the share of votes we got in this campaign. I am not that impressed and satisfied with the process of organizing voting abroad in other countries outside Slovenia. It was below the standards of European Union in organizing the campaign, and I hope to see some rather very strict measures against such steps in the future.
Meanwhile, former UN diplomat Turk was less bothered by the foreign votes and said he expected to advance to the runoff scheduled for the 11th of November.
Yes, I'm very satisfied with the result, and I think that it corresponds to my plans. I expected to be the second. Of course, I couldn't envisage a specific numerical proportion, but the results are good and I'm quite happy with them.
Before, the election polls predicted a clear win for Lojze Petele, who was supported by the right-wing parties in Slovenia. But even though his first-round win was not as convincing as expected, he said he was happy with the result.
I'm satisfied. I'm winner of the first round, and I'm optimistic as far as the second round is concerned.
But not everyone agrees with Petele's optimism for the second round. The Daily Dnevnik considers the winner of Sunday's vote for President Lojze Petele to be the biggest loser of all. Moreover, the paper anticipates that Petele will be defeated in the runoff 3 weeks later. In general, the majority of analysts and voters think the election campaign was dull, but some analysts are predicting that things could get more exciting ahead of the runoff. They expect a greater involvement of the political parties for their candidates, which have so far shied away from the race. The final official results are not expected to be released until after the 29th of October at noon, the deadline for votes that come in by mail from abroad.
Thanks, Ksenija. Rival Serbian and ethnic Albanian negotiators clashed bitterly in Vienna last week at talks on the future status of Kosovo. In the latest round of internationally mediated talks, both sides were presented with a 14-point document aimed at reaching common ground. That document does not explicitly mention independence for Kosovo, but both sides exchanged angry statements. Observers believe that unless some form of agreement is reached by the 10th of December, Kosovo will unilaterally declare independence. Elizabeth Alcock spoke to the Austrian diplomat and Balkans expert Wolfgang Petric about this current impasse.
I do believe you need to create a situation more conducive to an outcome. And of course, we all know by now there is no compromise in the usual sense. There is not a good solution and a bad solution. You can only try and find out what is the least bad. And clearly, the European Union, unless it becomes more active, will be stuck with a very big problem in the future.
Now, obviously, the most important word in these negotiations was the word independence.
Yes, well, maybe one should switch more towards defining a instead of a future status, really a European status for Kosovo, and see how one could include the whole region first and foremost, and then give Kosovo some sort of a European status which would avoid talking about sovereignty, independence and all this, because once you are part of the European Union, you are not independent and sovereign in the conventional sense, in the sense that a particular Kosovo-Albanian seat, or of course also Belgrade, they see this as their biggest challenge, and so one needs to work towards a more contemporary solution.
U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates has acknowledged Kosovo's uncertain future. He urged for the NATO to be prepared. At this stage, it looks like that even America is becoming nervous.
Well, clearly there are no easy solutions. Nothing is there. The United States, which does have a vested interest in Kosovo and in the region, is clearly bogged down in Iraq and Afghanistan. So Kosovo problem cannot really be just put into the lap of the Americans. In this way, I agree with the Secretary. On the other hand, you clearly need the support of the United States in an eventual solution, as you need Russia in this. But you, above all, you need European leadership, and that is still missing. The last-ditch effort that will be needed has to come from Europe.
Do you think there will be a solution?
I do believe there is still a solution, not as an end result, but as it's called, a future status. I think we need to first and foremost think in terms of a process that needs to lead to greater stability and to faster integration of this whole region into the European Union.
Wolfgang Petrich, diplomat and Balkans expert and author of Kosovo, Kosovar. And if you'd like to hear any of these stories again, go to our website. It's www.incentraleurope, all one word, .com. You'll find text and audio of all these stories. Insight Central Europe is a co-production from Polish Radio External Service, Radio Prague, Radio Slovakia International, Radio Budapest, Radio Slovenia International, and Austrian Radio. Now to Slovakia, where one-third of companies say they've been the victim of economic crime at some point in the past 2 years. The survey was done by the consulting firm PricewaterhouseCoopers, and it suggests Slovak companies are less susceptible to economic crime than others in Europe. But as Anka Dragu reports from Radio Slovakia International, this may not be the case.
Although this figure is much lower than in the rest of Central and Eastern Europe, the total direct loss caused by such type of crime in Slovakia has reached $2.9 million since 2005.
Většina ty společnosti nemají ani kapacity, ani znalosti, jakým způsobem tyto situace řešit.
The fact that a relatively small number of companies in Slovakia admit they have experienced some form of economic crime does not mean that economic criminality is low in this country. It can be explained by the fact that the level of concern about the risk posed by economic criminality is very low among managers and business owners. In other cases, they do not know about practices that are actually a crime because their control systems do not function well. Another explanation is that they do not want to speak about criminal cases publicly because they are afraid of the stigma attached to it.
Said Jan Vilita, the director of forensic services at the Slovak branch of PricewaterhouseCoopers. He led the team that completed the economic crime survey in Slovakia. The report is based on interviews with managers from 88 companies doing business in this country.
A co je zajímavější, je ta částka třetí. Třetina všech respondentů na Slovensku uvedla.
An interesting finding is that all of those surveyed agreed that corruption has been the most frequent form of economic criminality in Slovakia. 22% of companies have been asked to pay a bribe, mainly by public servants. And 36% have the feeling that they lost business contracts due to the fact that their competitors bribed officials. Both figures are lower than the average in Central and Eastern Europe, where 30% have been asked to pay a bribe, and 45% say that they have lost a contract because of corruption.
The survey shows that 70% of those doing some form of economic crime were new employees, mainly men older than 37 years of age and holding a university degree. Only 27% of criminals belong to the top management of companies, while a third of them were ordinary workers.
Překvapivě daleko větší procento společnosti uvádí, že hlavní okolností je nedostatečná lojalita k zaměstnanci.
People who do not identify with the company they work for are the most inclined to commit fraud. Then, of course, basic greed is a very strong driving force for many people, and such people are those who speculate on any lapses in the controlling mechanism of companies. What worries me is that 79% of respondents say that they have been unable to recover the loss, despite the fact that they took legal action against those responsible for the damage. One possible explanation is that 78% of companies in Slovakia are not insured against economic criminality, despite the fact that almost all insurance companies on the market offer such a product.
As for the future, Slovak companies seem to be very optimistic in comparison to those from the rest of the world. Despite heightened efforts at regulation and companies' investments in controls, fraud remains a major threat to companies around the world. They are afraid that the threat is evolving from simple theft to more complex schemes involving management and corruption. In Slovakia, only 5% of companies are worried that such threats may affect them in the next 2 years. So it might be worth waiting for the next global economic crime survey to see who was right.
Anka Dragu reporting. A list of great Czech inventions would include everything from the contact lens to lager beer. And now the beer vending machine can be added to the list. After a six-month trial, the world-famous brewer, Pilsner Urquell, has announced it's launching more of its new beer vending machines. They're similar to soft drink machines, although they read customer IDs, and it's claimed they sell only to people over 18. Well, with the network expanding, a beer vending machine could soon be coming to a location near you. Radio Prague's Rosie Johnston has the story.
A familiar sound, but maybe not such a familiar product. Instead of Coke or Pepsi, this vending machine sells tins of beer. The pivo automati, as they've come to be known, look like any other vending machine, with one key difference. As well as feeding money into the machine, you also have to swipe your national ID card through it if you want to buy a beer. David Polnar was one of the Pivo Automat's inventors.
We can recognize the age from ID cards and passports of the customer, and it is functional of all European and all of the world ID cards and passports also. So we can also the foreign people or tourists recognize if they are older than 18 and if they can buy the beers from our machine.
Mr. Polnar's firm took their Pivo Automat to Pilsner Urquell. The brewery liked what they saw and embarked upon a six-month trial of the machine. Vladimir Jurina is the brewery's corporate brand manager. He explained why he went for the idea.
Because it is another point of sales for us. It's important to have other possibilities to sell our product. So we would like to place the machine in places where are not common outlets.
Beer vending machines have been installed in hotels, sports venues and university dormitories. Perhaps unsurprisingly, the vending machines have enjoyed their biggest success amongst students.
Figures show that most successful, from our point of view, are machines placed in campuses and hostels, where we sell more than 1,000 cans monthly.
Mr. Jurina has been pleased with the sales over the trial period.
In total, we have sold 150 hectoliters, more than 150 hectoliters. It means more than 30,000 cans. And now we have placed about 50 vending machines. But I have to say that in the beginning, in the April, when we started with this project, we had just, I think, 5.
The figures sound impressive. But is the Pivo Automat's designer, Mr. Polnar, surprised by his machine's success?
No, no, no in Czech Republic, because the Czech Republic is world known as a very big country. What about the beer consumption? And Czech people likes beer.
Pilsner have the rights to the Pivo Automat for the next 5 years, but Mr. Polnar and his firm are working on a version for export. So who knows, the beer dispenser could yet be set for world domination.
Radio Prague's Rosie Johnston reporting. And if you'd like to hear any of these stories again or find out more about the Insight Central Europe team, check out our website. It's www.incentraleurope.com. And that's it for another Insight Central Europe. It's a co-production by Polish Radio External Service, Radio Budapest, Radio Slovakia International, Radio Prague, Radio Slovenia International, and Austrian ORF Radio. I'm Kerry Skyring. Join me and the rest of the team next week. Thank you.